2FM.
Now let's take a look at some of the stuff on the big screen over the weekend if you feel like going to the movies. Paul Whittington is here. What's on, Paul?
Well, the big one, Dave, without a doubt, is The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2.
Are you a fan? Sorry, I start that again. The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2.
I'm tired by the end.
So they obviously made these two together, split it in half, and they made four times the money.
Yeah, it's become a convention probably since Harry Potter to split the last book in half.
Yeah, no, I think they do that kind of thing with they did Back to the Future 2 and 3. I'm talking about filming them together more than anything else.
Oh, yes. No, they did film these together, which makes sense, but they also split what was a trilogy, the last of a trilogy of fantasy novels into two books. The last of these books, The Hunger Games books, was I think about 400 pages long.
Was that Mockingjay Part 1?
No, it was just Mockingjay. Refreshingly. And it's been translated into 4.5 hours of film, and therein lies the problem. And you know, something is bound to suffer and all that, and it turns out to be the viewer.
Really? Because not good. No.
Well,
are you a fan, by the way? Do you like the first one? It means
I have to say
I didn't like it at all.
I have to say I didn't mind the first one. I thought that it was a lot less dumb than, you know, if one compares it to other teen franchises, it was a lot less dumb, say, than Twilight, although the first one of those was okay as well. It had something going for it. It had this dystopian world. It wasn't exactly original, but it was interesting, kind of an Orwellian thing. For those who haven't seen it, it's based in this sort of futuristic America called Pan Am after a post-apocalypse where it's ruled by this very oily dictator played by Donald Sutherland, who's great fun, and divided into districts. And basically, while the elite live it up in the capital, the proles have to are in terrible conditions and are treated very brutally. Jennifer Lawrence played Katniss Everdeen, who's selected for these annual Hunger Games, which is basically like a gladiatorial kind of Roman era combat televised to divert the masses. And she becomes the talisman of this uprising. This has gone on through the first three films. Yeah. And this is the very last. And in this, she sets her sights on the capital, but doesn't quite trust Julianne Moore, who's the head of the
problems. These one of the things that seems to be like it's for 12s, isn't it?
Yeah,
a bit heavy, isn't it?
Just about. Well, I thought that in this, there's one scene.
The whole premise of the first one was heavy enough.
It is heavy enough, and people are getting shot in front of you and everything. But I thought there's a sequence when they're in the capital, and they're underground, and these kind of
these
sort of pigmentless ghouls attack them. I thought, geez, I don't know. I know a 12-year-old now isn't the same as when I was 12, but my God, I don't think I would have been okay with that. But they get away with it. Mm. There are some nice sequences, and it's very dark. The mood of it's very dark, which I don't mind at all, but the pacing of it is all over the place. I mean, it's just characters that one has invested in to a certain extent because they've been in all the previous films are dispensed with. They just got rid of, you know, just really quickly without comment almost. It sort of goes and jumps and starts. It kind of gives away this big late twist, and it's only really Jennifer Lawrence, who's a very talented actress, who kind of keeps the thing together and keeps you interested. I thought it was a bit weak. I thought even the first of the Mockingjay Part 1, I thought was a bit better than this.
Right, so
but people go to it, fans.
Listen, it's a guaranteed $100 billion dollar seller.
Well, I think the last one, the Mockingjay Part 1, made about $800 million. This will probably do the same.
Right, yeah, exactly. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, and in a town where money talks, etc., it's a success and a hit. Okay, give us a little. The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2, not really, says Paul.
Not really, but...
What about Love?
Have you ever come across Gaspar Noé?
He's kind of naughty sex stuff.
Naughty sex stuff. That sums up his whole career in a manner he would hate.
Some of the posters for this movie, I believe, were sort of taken off at the last minute. Bizarre stuff.
Bizarre stuff.
As in, like, really, really? Can we have that as we drive down Sunset Boulevard? I don't think so.
No, I said in my review in the paper yesterday that if you've ever wondered what a 3D penis looks like, and wonder no more.
This really, is full of, go and see Love.
Full of 3D penises. Never in repose, Dave, mind you. Always primed, ready to go. Right. And he has argued, I think, entirely bogusly that this film is an attempt to rescue loving sex from, you know, from the clutches of pornography, as it were, and absolutely not. It's 3D pornography, and the dialogue is as bad as porno dialogue. The story of it is this obnoxious American guy in Paris, sort of, he has a baby with this girl, unfortunate girl, and he's remembering his real love, which is this kind of gap-toothed French one. And basically, they just fiddle with each other all the time, and it's, I really, really disliked it, I have to say. It has no, it's just one, it's just on one level. It's just looking at people making love. And if you're at a remove from that, it's like even in novels and people try and describe it, it just looks like, you know, the butcher shop, you know?
Okay. All right. So love, thumbs down.
Well, for me, absolutely. Right. Yeah, there may be people who love it, but they will not include me.
Okay. Gaspar Noy, is that his name?
Gaspar Noy. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. He made Irreversible. Remember that one that had the notorious rape scene?
Actually, I never saw it, but I do. Yeah.
And that even though that was awful, that that has a lot in it. There's a lot going on in it. Otherwise, like, but this, there is not. There is merely the business.
All right, then. No love for Gaspar. Okay, no. Let's go on to the next one. Steve McQueen, yeah. The Man and Le Mans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you will remember that film because it used to get shown on television, and it's one of the most boring films ever made.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, one of the first, and it was a big thing in CinemaScope and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, they'd say anything to get you to watch it, but it was his great project because McQueen. His great love was car racing. He was a good car racer as well. He did quite well. And of course, he paid a price for it, apparently, because of the asbestos suits are supposed to have been what contributed to his cancer. Right. He died when he was 50. He at the end of the 60s, he was the biggest thing in Hollywood. He'd had a couple of very big hits, Bullet, and you know that one with Faye Dunaway, Thomas Crown Affair. Huge film. Not a good film for me, but a huge film. And so he used all his star power to come to France and make this film that would be based around the Le Mans 24-hour race. And in fact, he wanted to race in it himself, but the insurance people wouldn't allow it, of course, because at that stage, they used to die all the time, like racing these souped-up Porsches around narrow streets. So he came there to do it. He brought John Sturgis with him, who, you know, the Great Escape, great director. But the thing turned into this absolute mess. McQueen was in charge. Sturgis got disjusted and left. There were fallings out, all sorts of extramarital stuff going on. This documentary tells the story of all that, and it's reasonably entertaining and pretty well
done.
Did
any of this sort of stuff, like, sort of seep out back 30 or 40 years ago, any of the film stuff in this, like, were you able to see it before in any shape or form? No,
able to see the
stuff that was done in Europe?
No. This is a lot of this footage is new, and there are interviews as well. There's some very interesting footage of him. He's very interesting. He's a funny man because, I mean, he emerges in this as a not very likable man,
not
which
the
I've heard
guy
before,
in the world,
and also
maybe,
not even the sharpest tool in the shed either. I mean, if your soul is moved by motor racing, what does that say about you? They also talked to some of the racers, and one of them, he lost a leg, and he's this very English fella. These were great drivers from the 70s, and I don't think McQueen apparently tried to get him some money for the film, but he never came to see him in hospital or anything like that. Mm. It just, you know, and he, like, it was his fault in the sense that it was his film. It's interesting.
So it's not Senna.
No, it's not Senna at all. It's not. There's no gripping story at the middle of it. There's just who, you know, what was this man and who was he like and so on. And we do get some idea. His ex-wife talks, and his son also speaks a lot about it.
So it's well titled. It is Le Mans and it is The Man, Steve McQueen.
It is. And if you like him, you'll be very interested in this.
Okay, so is there anything good this week at all?
The Steve McQueen documentary is okay. Like, it's pretty well put together. It's just maybe a little bit too long. The Perfect Guy is just
the
not
perfect
really
guy.
Okay.
That's the other one. Yeah. What's that about?
Well, it's kind of Fatal Attraction for slow learners, except that the bunny boiler is a man rather than a woman, basically. And it's to me, it's kind of a B picture. It's about this Los Angeles woman, Sana Lathan plays her, who dumps her boyfriend because he seems to be a bit commitment shy and she wants to have a child because time's a-wasting. And she meets this guy played by Michael Ealy in a bar who's a very handsome, suave person, very, very mannerly, no funny stuff early on, very, you know, real gentleman. And she thinks he's wonderful and starts going out with him, but he turns out to be an absolute maniac. And after she breaks up with him, he does not accept this and starts, you know, stalking her and breaking into her house. And
so he's not the perfect guy.
He's the opposite of a perfect guy, but I think the point being that there is no such thing as a perfect guy.
Really?
Even us, Dave. Yeah.
Really? They never call
so
me.
They never do. So, I mean, it's kind of all right, but I think what films like this should do that have a kind of a, you know, that kind of hackneyed kind of premise should make have a bit of fun and be a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it doesn't do that. It doesn't have the wit to do it.
Okay, Steve McQueen does what it does. The Hunger Games is for those who want, probably, but it doesn't do it for you. Love is ridiculous and The Perfect Guy doesn't work.
Absolutely.
All right, come on. By the way, you were on last week talking about Steve Jobs, so I went to see it there the weekend.
Yeah, what did you think?
I thought it was very good.
Yeah.
I thought it was very good. I mean, I loved everything about it. Yeah. Anything with Alan, Sorkin can write anything, and I just love all that
stuff. Yeah, I thought it was
Having said that, I know it's Steve Jobs at three different launches, and I would have liked to have seen one of the launches, the actual him on stage.
Without it stopping all the time.
And I was very Birdman in terms of backstage all the time. And why is it that his wife arrived at every single one of them just to destroy the whole evening?
Yeah, just to ruin
it was all
his night.
A bit of whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, basically, it was a stage play, but it was very good.
Yeah.
And Fassbender was great.
He was brilliant.
He was indeed. And so were you, Paul. Thank you very much indeed, Paul Whittington.